Hey, whether you enjoy listening to Breaking Down Collapse or Building Up Resilience, I think you'll also really enjoy our bonus content on Patreon.
Yeah, Kellen and I take 20 minutes each week to talk about the news that's happening all around us and Collapse as it plays out. We like to have a little fun with it, but also make sure that you're aware of what's going on in the world of Collapse.
We look forward to having you join us there. The link to join us on Patreon is in the episode description.
Folks, thanks for joining the podcast today. I had the privilege of interviewing Sidian Kaufman. He's the owner of Pure Water Northwest. I'll talk a little bit about that in a second. Basically, Sidian is an insider expert to what makes our water work, what makes it clean, what makes it not clean, how municipalities treat our water and don't treat our water. Thought it would be fascinating to talk to somebody with this sort of inside knowledge about what's happening behind the scenes in our water and what can we do to better make sure that our water is protected, as well as to discuss some of the threats that we face with our water infrastructure. That said, Sidian Kaufman is the owner of Pure Water Northwest, dedicated to helping families and communities take control of their water quality. With a mission to demystify clean water, Sidian empowers people to make informed decisions without relying on hype or half-truths. He specializes in cutting through confusion to deliver real science-backed solutions and loves exploring fringe topics like structured or hydrogenated water to clarify what's fact and what's fiction. Here's the interview with Sidian. All right, great. Sidian, I appreciate you so much for joining the podcast. It's great to have you here.
Yeah, thanks. Great to be here.
So just to kind of start off, I think it might be helpful if you can give our listeners just a little bit of a background as far as who are you, what are you passionate about, and how did you get started in the business of water?
Yeah, sure. My name's Sidian Kaufman. I'm one of the owners of Pure Water Northwest. And I honestly got into water because I saw how much it affects everything. Specifically, I was a property manager, and our tenants would, not all of them, obviously, but some of them would complain about their water. And it would be brown, or it would smell like rotten eggs. And it would be like, why is this happening? And I would go get it tested and take it to the owner. And I would say, here's the results. And look, it's not actually illegal. It's within the legal guidelines, despite how it looks and how it smells. And I couldn't fathom how that was possible. So aside from having to negotiate with an owner who didn't want to do anything about it, but was going to lose tenants, that's a whole other story. It made me curious. My daughter is also affected by water. She can get eczema from even a little bit of hardness in her water. And hardness isn't bad for you, but some people, their skin can really be affected by it. And so I had all these questions, and I reached out to people in water. And Chris Pelton, who founded this company that I own with him, Pure Water Northwest, he gave me all the answers and I was hooked. So since then, I've been just scouring everything I can, doing classes, understanding not just the science of water, but how it affects people, how it matters for our industry, for various industries, for how our infrastructure affects it and how it affects our infrastructure. And also how it can affect people's lives, not just here, but around the world. So that's me in a nutshell.
Awesome. Thank you. So going a little deeper on your business, what is your business model? What do you do exactly?
I'm not here to really super promote the business, but the short of it is we take a very different approach to water treatment than most companies. You get your Culligans and your Kineticos and Aquas. Anyhow, I guess I don't need to name all the other companies, but they're product-based companies, right? So they have products, and their business model then is to sell those products. And then if your water doesn't match the product, they put in whatever's closest to the match. They don't usually, on some cases, they do thorough testing. We try to test every single time. We try to identify what's in the water. Our big motto is test, don't guess. And after getting test results, we customize solutions based on that, which is what really what real water science should be doing.
So when you say that when you were doing property management and your tenants would have cruddy water, and then you would find that it was within the legal guidelines, is that an EPA thing, or who determines the legality or how much stuff can be in the water?
Yep. The EPA sets two standards for drinking water. If you go to their website, which I could share on the screen if you want, the National Primary Drinking Sure. Water Regulations. All right. So if you go to the EPA website, which I'm sharing here, you'll see that there are two standards here. Now, there's also health advisory limits and such, which get a little more complicated, but we can just focus here. There's the MCL and the MCLG, okay? And the MCL, you can just click here to find out what it means. It is the highest level of a contaminant that is allowed in drinking waters. MCLs are set as close to the MCLGs as feasible, using best available technology, taking cost into consideration. MCLGs are the level below which there is no known or expected health risk. So we have a health guideline that's different from a legal guideline. So if somebody has arsenic, for example, if somebody has 0.01 parts per million of arsenic, milligrams per liter of arsenic, then it's fine, it's allowed. And if you have people take their samples into labs, even though there's two standards, every lab is going to talk about this standard, if that makes sense. And they're going to verbally tell that person when they give them the report back, you're good, you're within the legal level. But the MCO
and one
health standard.
One thing that stood out to me there was that it took cost and like price into consideration. So basically saying, well, yeah, this might not be healthy, but it would cost too much to fix sort of thing. Is that what I'm understanding?
That's exactly what it is saying. Exactly. And let's not hammer on the EPA too hard, because that is cost is a reality, right? Cost is a true reality. And if a municipality could not reasonably afford to get out a contaminant, they have a choice. Give nobody water or give people water that's as good as they can get it. Right?
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. But then like you're saying, the straightforward seeming answer that comes back is, no, your water's fine. It's healthy. You're all good. People aren't really getting the full picture or information about the actual sanitation of their water.
Exactly. They're not getting the full picture, so they're not able to make their own informed decision. That's part of the reason our company exists. We don't want to give people any treatment for water that's good. In fact, 20% of our clients, we say, your water's fine, you don't need us. The other 80%, about 75% of that 80% thought their water was fine the whole time. And they suddenly realized that it wasn't because they got sick, or because they read an article, or because they heard a podcast.
Yeah. Okay. So for the average person, because me being an average person, I think I'm pretty ignorant about what's in my water, and I just kind of have blindly trusted that it's healthy because everyone's drinking it, right? What can a person like me do, and how worried should I be? Like, what's the probability that my water is not as healthy as it should be?
Well, let's actually get specific. Do you mind giving a nearby zip code?
All right, let's do 80829.
Okay, great. So 80829. All right, so for the zip code that we're going to look at, I'm going to place called the Environmental Working Group. This is an independent agency. People have various views about this organization, some really good, some really bad, but the main thing is they're a nonprofit. So they are not aligned towards a specific agenda in theory. And the cool thing they do is they check water quality in various places. So I look up 80829, and there are three municipalities. We can just take like the first municipality that comes up. And then this municipality would have sent them in a water sample because they would have asked. And then from this municipality's results, they would list what the actual parts per billion of this contaminant is, as well as list what this contaminant can do. So this is the Environmental Working Group's tap water database. And this is one way you can help actually identify what is in your water. Now, interpreting, it's a different matter. I know how to interpret all of this.
Right.
The majority of these are just chlorine byproducts. However, there is radium in this water, and that level of radium is not super bad. But I also personally would want zero radium. And for a $300 to $1,200 RO reverse osmosis that you put under your counter, you can have none of this in your water, in your drinking water, if that makes sense.
I see. Yeah.
These are the other contaminants detected as well that are not quite as high: fluoride, nitrates, monochloroacetic acid, barium, all that stuff, which also all can be out of your water if you want. So that's an example of what you can do to help identify personally. Also, if you were to go to Manitow Springs, a water quality report in Google, you will usually be able to find the water quality results of the actual municipality.
Mm.
Will tell you whether or not it has PFAS or not. And usually you'll actually be able to find a report. Here we go. And this report will usually have actual data in it right here of what they have actually tested. So usually if you're on a municipality, you can actually find the answers yourself of what is in the water. And you found that you can see that the radium listed here is the same as the radium listed there.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
That is a way.
Interesting.
And so that's a municipality. If you have a private well, you've got to do your own test. On our website, we have a way that you can purchase tests for a well. There are ways to actually do that other ways, but full spectrum testing is what you want. You don't want to test the state minimums. The state minimums are usually about 5 contaminants. You want more like 50 contaminants to get a full picture of your well.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay. I got a couple follow-up questions there. So one of them was, I saw that fluoride was one that you mentioned as being a contaminant. And I know it's kind of a hot topic right now. There's a couple different states, Florida, I believe, Utah, which are either already have or are working towards banning fluoride, and other states that are going to be coming close behind that. What's your stance on fluoride? I've always grown up being told that fluoride was important for your teeth and all of that, but is it a hazard?
Oh, so I don't like when things become political on a topic because it makes the science kind of evaporate into the noise. But the truth about fluoride is that we don't have an absolute, without a doubt, truth about fluoride. But I can give you some data points about it. The study that was done 20 years ago on the health effects of fluoride for IQ, that was not a test done with the amount of fluoride that's in our water, and the amount really matters. The Harvard study, however, that was done more recently was done with an amount that is closer to the amount that is in some municipalities, but not all. And it did also show somewhat of an effect on IQ. If that study turns out to be true, because one study does not mean a result, if that study turns out to be true, then absolutely and unequivocally, there should be zero fluoride in drinking water. That's what I think. Now, why? Isn't it good for your teeth and bones? The amount of effect that it has on teeth and bones has not been, with the same scientific rigor that would require us to remove it from the drinking water, has not been proven to have that significant of a positive effect, especially in a society that fluoridates their toothpaste, which is us. One other data point too, in a lot of the Norwegian countries, they have no fluoride and never have, and they have better teeth outcomes than we do. So their dental outcomes being better does not prove that fluoride is not useful because they also have less sugar in their diets.
Right. Right. Causation and correlation. And it sounds like there's a lot of different studies that need to be done to really narrow it down and find out.
Yes.
For sure.
But I don't think, I don't think we're going to notice a gigantic effect in Utah and Florida if they do that compared to places that don't. I don't think with the amount of fluoride that's used, I do not think this is a hot topic actually, despite it being politically a hot topic.
Sure. Yep. Okay. Well said. All right. That's interesting. Your business sounds awesome. And I know that as, you know, as a person who relies on water to survive, I should care more probably about what's in my water and knowing what's being introduced to my body. You mentioned PFAS a second ago, which is another sort of increasing concern, and it's becoming more mainstream, the idea of PFAS chemicals. Can you walk us through a little bit about what that's about?
Yeah, I mean, so this is the funny thing about the way humans seem to work. They do a thing and then they notice a thing. And we've known about PFAS for a long time now. Forever chemicals have been talked about until it finally reaches a crescendo and people are like, uh-oh, we need to worry about this. It was only last April that the EPA actually started setting standards for forever chemicals. And when I say last April, I mean, don't mean 2 months ago, I mean 14 months ago. And the reality is that the levels that they're taking it to now are some of the most strict I've seen for almost any contaminant, which means they consider it really, really bad. And yet it's allowed to be in the water supply for another 4 years because 2029 is the required deadline for municipalities to get the forever chemicals down. So we have 4 years where 200 million Americans are going to be living with PFAS. And how many of those know that? I really doubt it's the majority of them.
What's putting these chemicals into the drinking water?
Well, PFAS specifically gets into the drinking water because it was used in so many things. But the main thing that it was really used for that is really also not something you can criticize very heavily is fire foam. If you go out to a fire that's burning with, you know, grease or some chemical, you're not putting that out with water. You have to use foam. So you have a choice, like, do I add PFAS to the environment or do I save these people's lives in this property? The choice is really obvious if that's what you're up against. Luckily, they've created new foam now, which doesn't have any of that stuff in it. Whether or not that has anything bad in it is still unknown. We could be dealing with, it's called green foam, I think. We could be dealing with a green foam problem in the future, but right now, it's what the new solution is. It was also on Gore-Tex. It was in Teflon. It was in so many things. It's really good at creating basically a very connected surface. So it's good at smothering fires because it cuts off all the oxygen, and it's good at preventing water from penetrating.
Okay. Okay. And you mentioned earlier 200 million Americans have PFAS in their water, and maybe some of them know and some of them don't. That's what, roughly 2/3 of Americans. Where is that number coming from? And is that like 2/3 of municipalities have it in their water? How does that work?
It's not really been just municipalities, but that number came from a study that I read on PFAS. And so I suppose I probably shouldn't be quoting singular studies based on what I just said. But
sure.
But yeah, that was what that study came to, is that they estimated that 200 million Americans are living with PFAS. And that would be mostly municipalities. Well water actually has much less likelihood to have PFAS in it than municipalities. It doesn't mean that it's not in well water, mind you. It definitely can be, but
sure,
it is less likely.
Okay. Okay. All right. That's very helpful. Well, we've kind of focused here on a more narrow but deep topic of what we have in our own water. before we started the interview, you mentioned something about how something that you find very important is that while water is a sort of building block, not a building block, but a necessity for life, it goes beyond that into the way that our modern world works with our infrastructure, machinery, all of that. Why don't you tell me a little bit about what you were getting at there?
Yeah, I mean, well, humans need water, right? And we all know that we're mostly made of water. That is true for the planet. The planet is also, at least on the surface, mostly made of water. And it is in every single thing we do. It is used for agriculture. It is used for energy. Is it used for sanitization? It is used in industrial applications. So aside from the social stability that is created by clean water is needed for energy. And water distribution also requires energy. So they do work together. If you have people, you know, are going to die with 2 to 3 days without water, that means if you have a grid go down, you have 2 to 3 days before you have total societal collapse. It will, there is no question one way or the other. If people don't have access to water, because all the water will be gone from the stores day one, you then have that right. much more time before people are digging their own boreholes or going to their neighbor's house who has a well or going to rivers and trying to figure out how to drink that water or killing people for water. It's, and the, so that's a grid breakdown scenario, but falling even short of that, all agriculture requires good fresh water. 70% of the fresh water used globally is for irrigation. Crops like almonds, cotton, beef, they use like so many gallons of water per singular product that it's mind-blowing. Treating water and being having access to water is one of the most essential parts of our infrastructure and very, very easily matches the needs human bodies have for water. We have to keep moving water, we have to keep cleaning water, and we have to keep making water available or things break down pretty bad.
From a continuity standpoint, from a societal continuity standpoint, I think we often, it's very clear that we think about water that we have to drink, and we might even think about water that's required for agriculture. But the relationship that you've described between water and energy, between, you know, water and infrastructure and the requirement for infrastructure to have water to continue to function, our technology relies on water. And one part that's fascinating is that you keep saying clean water because the earth is covered in water. We've got so much water on earth. We're mostly water, right? But the amount of clean, treatable water is actually very limited and decreasing.
Yep, absolutely. And that is why the dream the dream invention for society is converting heavy hydrogen or salt water into energy in a cold fusion kind of sense, which we're probably 100 years away from. I mean, which if you think about it, it's not that long. And boy, if that happens, suddenly society does not need almost anything anymore because it creates energy and water with one single action. But up till then, yeah, the struggle is real.
So between now and that point then, over the next 100 years or so, we have plenty of issues that we're facing regarding water. So what's your biggest concern when you look at our trajectory, when you look at whether it's water availability, whether it's treatment of water, whether it's infrastructure, like where do you see the scary points?
Well, that depends on where you are geographically. Like in Africa, there's still serious problems with access to water, which has serious social implications. Around here, our infrastructure is pretty rough. I mean, there's I can't remember the percentage, but there are still mains that in the US that are made of wood and lead. Still yeah. Water mains that are running that way. I can't remember. It was like 50 billion. I mean, 50, it was like, no, it was in the billions. Some billions number of treated water per day is lost through pipe leaking alone. Just through pipe leaking in the infrastructure.
Yeah.
That is a tremendous amount of water, fresh water loss. So, I mean, I would say in our area, infrastructure might be one of the, most worrisome or, up and coming problems. Water treatment is still currently pretty readily available and pretty with the technology on it is only improving. So, I mean, I would say that would be it in our area.
Infrastructure. So you're saying some areas of the world it's access, it's just getting water from A to B or even having enough water in the area that's usable. In our part of the world here in the US, it's more of an infrastructure issue. But you think that treatment, as far as if there's water available and if we can deliver it to people, we have the technology on a widespread basis to be able to deliver relatively healthy and clean water.
Relatively healthy and clean water, exactly. And then if people have the money at their homes, they can get perfect water.
Interesting. Okay. So knowing that that infrastructure for you is sort of geographically here the biggest concern, what can a person do to mitigate some of those risks?
I don't know what a person can do about infrastructure. I'm sorry to have that answer on a podcast, but I don't have that answer. Go ahead.
I just say, I don't expect you to be an expert on that. I know that's not really, the infrastructure side of things is not your expertise. I'm just curious if you've seen, one thing that you mentioned to me in your introductory email when we spoke was regarding wells and sort of this, there's a lot of myths about wells. If you had the choice, would you rather be, on a couple of acres of land with a well, or even, I guess it could be a small property with a well, or would you rather be on municipal water?
Oh, that's no question. If I personally had the choice, I would be on a well without a doubt, because the water's free forever and always available and there's no infrastructure requirement. And because, and this is the kicker, I could treat it very easily. And that's what anyone on a well should really have the viewpoint of. A lot of people get on wells and they think their water is great because it's on a well, not being aware that the majority of contaminants that they're dealing with have nothing to do with it being introduced through what's called the hydrologic cycle or contamination from outside the well, but because the periodic table of elements still has 70% of the things on it toxic to humans. So, and all of that could be in the drinking water. Like any single thing on the periodic table of elements can be in drinking water. So you need to test for that. You need to test for what could be in your water. And then after that, treat for it. And then you've got a great setup. You maintain that system. You have free water as much as you want. It's great.
Love it. Well, we've on the podcast, we've done some episodes on infrastructure. We focused on different parts of infrastructure like bridges and roads and those types of things. But this conversation has definitely got me intrigued and thinking of some future episode ideas around our water infrastructure, specifically with the way we deliver water within municipalities. So I'll have to dig a little deeper and check that out. Before we part ways, I had a couple last questions for you, because I know that you have mentioned you have seen, whether it's through research or through anecdotal, I'm not sure, but you've seen how water relates to inequality and especially gender inequality in different parts of the world. Why don't you kind of lay that out for me as well?
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing about that is this is really a social, what's the best way to put it? It's like a social trap, as it were. A person can only elevate their society as much as whatever survival mechanism doesn't restrict them from doing that. The way it is right now in a lot of places is if you want access to water, you have to walk for miles to get it. And without a borehole near you or a well near you, without the ability to gather and treat water, you're walking for miles every single day to gather water and bring it back for your family. And who is doing that? Are women or children? That is just what's happening in these cultures. And if that's what's happening, then men are working jobs and making money to be able to buy food and keep the house. And that means women cannot escape that relationship. They have no choice but to stay in it. And they cannot be educated because they're spending all their time fetching water. Little kids also spending all their time fetching water cannot be educated. The access to water has been shown to completely overhaul the culture of an area. And it makes a huge difference for those people.
Interesting. So increasing access to water in some of these nations, you mentioned Africa earlier as being a specific geographic area where in many parts of Africa, there's stress on the access to water. So you're saying better access to water would have a bigger influence positively on the lifestyle of women and children than it would on men, because women are spending their time getting water instead of being educated and other things they could be doing with their time.
Yeah. And it would have a positive impact on the men too, but yes, it would have a positive, much, sure, much greater impact on women and children, and also mortality. I mean, it would have a massively increased impact on mortality. As long as the well is relatively safe, it changes the mortality rate in the whole community, allowing the community to expand. And yeah, it makes a huge difference.
Well, again, something that being in the West, I should be more cognizant of and thinking of it more often than I do is the fact that so many places in the world, stability hinges on water from an individual standpoint, from a cultural standpoint, and from, I mean, we're talking about entire nations and regions of the world at war or potentially at war because of access to water across borders and those types of things. Yeah, water's not something to take lightly.
That's right. That's a good quote.
You know, I walk down and I stick my cup in the dispenser in my fridge and it's cold and it's just delicious water. But literally every time I do that, I need to be thinking that my life and the stability of our world depends on that delicious, clear liquid. So, Sidian, I appreciate your time today. It's been really enlightening to have you here. I'll make sure that our listeners know where to find you, where to reach out to you if they have more questions, and especially those in the Pacific Northwest who might be looking at getting their water treated.
Really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
No problem.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure, startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.